Good evening. Here we are once again, June 28th. My name is Don Ecker, the name of the show, UFOs Tonight, and you're listening to the Cable Radio Network. You know, one of the things that I've noticed in all the years that I've been involved in researching this subject is how many times information comes up, people start talking about what is the government doing in this? And you hear names bandied about, people that are involved in suppressing UFO information and suppressing all types of information that people feel the American public should be aware of. They talk about the NSA, the CIA, the DIA, I mean the whole alphabet soup. Well, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have a gentleman that spent 25 years in the Central Intelligence Agency, a man that spent his entire career carrying out the aims and the policies of his government and the Central Intelligence Agency. Retiring in 1977, Ralph McGehee then began writing a book that was finally published in 1983. The name of that book, you probably saw it sitting around in bookshelves all over the country, Deadly Deceits, My 25 Years in the Central Intelligence Agency. Today, Ralph McGehee has one of the finest informational databases available anywhere on the CIA and on covert operations, over 6 megabytes of information that you can utilize if you have your own computer. The CIA tried to keep that out of their hands. Also, they went to court. They tried to suppress his book. They tried to suppress his database. Well, the information is out there, and Ralph is my guest tonight, and we're very glad to have him. And we're going to get to the show right after we come back, so stay tuned. This is going to be a good one. Hi. Okay, we're back, and if you have a question for my guest this evening or for myself, and you live in the 213-310 or 818 area code, you can... Ralph, are you there?
Yes.
Good evening. How are things back in sunny Virginia?
Pretty good. A little bit late, but okay.
Okay. Well, we might as well tell the audience right up front that you don't have a lot of information on the UFO subject, but you do have an incredible amount of information on other things that could segue into that. For example, disinformation.
Yes. That is one of the, I think, one of the misconceptions that many people have about the CIA, that it primarily is an intelligence collection and dissemination agency. And the fact that it's primarily a propaganda organization just doesn't seem to penetrate, or it's that it's concealed. That role that the DHC has is concealed. This isn't just me saying that. There was a congressional investigation in 1975-76 that said the agency conducted all 800 major covert operations and thousands of other covert operations. And the primary number of operations were the propaganda operations. So propaganda being one of the major categories, election operations being another, and paramilitary operations being a third. So propaganda is deception, deceit. And just thousands of operations have been running over the years. I like one of the, I think one of the most successful and almost unbelievable propaganda operations was the justification given for invading Grenada. I spent a week or so in Grenada before the invasion.
Is this after you were retired?
This was after I was retired, yes. And it's just a tiny little island of about 100,000 people. The roads were terrible. No, it didn't have an army, didn't have a navy, didn't have an air force, didn't even have a commercial airline. It was probably one of the poorest nations in the world. And when the United States invaded Grenada, we did it on the basis that Grenada posed a security threat to the United States.
Well, you know, it's funny that you should mention Grenada, because a number of years ago, the Prime Minister of Grenada went before the United Nations speaking about the topic that we do a radio show on every month, which is UFOs. He at the time, was quite concerned about it. But to be perfectly fair, isn't it true that the Cubans had quite an extensive presence there in 83 when the United States did invade?
Well, that was the claim. The New York Times, I think, headline was that we are fighting off Cuban and Soviet aggression in Grenada. Castro went on the air right away and said we have 153 middle-aged airport workers on the island, but that's all we have. And we were claiming, the United States was claiming, that there were over 1,000 Cuban troops on the island. And when the dust settled, some months after it was all over, we finally admitted, you know, there were only 153 airport workers. But one of the devices that the CIA has used over the years to justify its operation is to plant communist weapons in a country, and then to make arrangements for its discovery, and then through its propaganda operation, say, look, the communists are taking over, and this and this, whatever. And it's a justification for the invasion. Well, lo and behold, when we invaded Grenada, President Reagan went on television and said, my fellow Americans, we found warehouses loaded to the rafters with communist weapons. And that was one of the justifications used. And that's the fact that Cubans were on the island was also used.
Well, let me ask you a question, Rob. You were recruited out of Notre Dame to join the agency back in 1952, weren't you?
Yes.
What would take someone who, in those days, probably you would have been considered the epitome of the Cold War warrior, and a number of years later turn you into a critic of the agency that you worked for 25 years? What would it be that would turn someone around?
Well, in my particular case, I was very much a Cold Warrior. You know, I joined the agency during the McCarthy era, and everything was being said. You know, I was out at the forefront of the battle against international communism. What turned me around were two incidents. One in Thailand. I was heading a program to counter the Communist Party of Thailand in the rural areas, and I found that the Communist Party there was many, many times larger than we were admitting. And all of a sudden, the information was buried, and I was removed, and we went right back to reporting the very reduced numbers. Well, this was sort of the clue that something was wrong. Then I volunteered to go to Vietnam because I wanted to win the war in Vietnam, essentially. But I found that in Vietnam, the story was absolutely the same that it was in Thailand. Matter of fact, that's why they couldn't admit the truth in Thailand, because the communists in Thailand were using the same organizational techniques that were used in Vietnam. And if we admitted the truth about Thailand, then we'd have to say the truth about Vietnam, which would have destroyed all our justifications for being in that country. And I tried for my entire 2 years in Vietnam to change this. It wasn't that I wanted to change it so that we would withdraw, but ultimately I saw that we were lying, and CIA's intelligence was pretty much the same as its propaganda that was directing at the American people, and that the war that they were portraying had nothing to do with the reality.
All right, we're going to have to take a break right now, Ralph, but when we come back, I want to speak about some disinformation operations that you yourself are allowed to speak about, and how it might segue over into the UFO arena, and why the CIA might use a subject as esoteric as UFOs for some type of reason. So hold on, we'll be right back. A few weeks ago, you heard my... Okay, Ralph, we're back. Ralph, in 1953, as a matter of fact, you now have it included in your CIA-based computerized database. The Central Intelligence Agency convened a panel that today is known as the Robertson Scientific Panel on the Study of UFOs. Basically what they did, they brought in some of the brightest scientific personnel available in the country, spent a couple of days looking at films, tapes, reports, and then instead of making a decision on whether these objects might or might not present national security considerations. They decided how to treat it in the public eye, and basically they took the tack of ridiculing witnesses, making the subject ludicrous in the press, and in some cases even destroying lives. Why would something like this have been considered such a threat, and why would the agency, which by charter is not allowed to interfere in domestic affairs, have been given free rein to operate on something like this?
Well, the agency is forbidden to involve itself in domestic issues. Ostensibly, it's forbidden, but since its inception, one of its main target audiences has been the American people. And any issue that threatens the perceptions that they want to set forth will be attacked. And, we can see that, you know, in all of its propaganda operations. So if they felt that this particular issue would be a threat to, for whatever reasons that they would consider, then they certainly would go about attacking it. And they're quite good at changing people's minds, ridiculing people, planting evidence, forging documents, doctoring photographs. All of these techniques are used in this covert operation.
Well, you know, that's been one of the major issues in the field of unidentified flying objects and UFO research. Over the years, of course, a number of documents have been discovered or released, and they usually fall into a great hole of controversy over whether they're legitimate or not. As a matter of fact, I personally sent you a couple of documents that I know you looked at. One was allegedly a briefing document prepared for incoming President Jimmy Carter on the UFO situation. And of course, there are other documents that you may or may not be aware of, like the MJ-12 documents, which allegedly were a briefing document for incoming President Dwight Eisenhower. What, in your opinion, is the best way for someone that has an interest in this? Because the Central Intelligence Agency, as well as other intelligence folks like NSA and so forth, have admitted that they have many documents still in their files that they refuse to release because of national security considerations, but yet the government has maintained since 1969 that UFOs are not a national security consideration. But when people file Freedom of Information Act requests, which of course were meant to get some of these documents out that were no longer considered essential to national security, they come back completely blackened out. What is the best way for a researcher, a citizen, a civilian to pursue something like this? And what options do they have when they're shot down, as has happened now in the last 12 years? I think you're aware that the FOIA Act has been drastically curtailed.
Yes. I have tried to get my files that they've maintained on me from the FOIA Act, Freedom of Information Act, and after a wait of a couple of years, I received some documents that essentially I had sent them, and that was all I got. There is an organization in Washington that that's dedicated to getting documents, government documents, and recording them and computerizing those documents. That's the National Security Archives. That might be one place to run a search. They've been gathering documents released by the government, and they've been filing lawsuits and requests over the last 5 or 10 years, and they have a very large collection. So I would suggest that people might want to contact the National Security Archives see if they want that sort of information. See if they have that sort of information. Other than that, unless somebody leaves one of the intelligence agencies who has particular knowledge of the topic and is willing to come forth with it, I don't know any way to get the information.
Well, then, of course, if someone would come forward with information that is classified, that is a violation of the law, and that individual would be subject to prosecution, wouldn't he?
Yes. Well, there's a double standard that operates here. If you come forth with information that the administration would like to get out.
A controlled leak?
A controlled leak, or they just won't bother to prosecute you. But if you come out with information they don't want to get out, then you are subject to the laws and could be charged with a crime and prosecuted.
Well, let me tell you something, Ralph, and update you on something that you may or may not be aware of. Today is the 28th of June, and it was exactly 45 years and 4 days ago when Kenneth Arnold had a major UFO sighting around Mount Rainier in Washington State. This was considered, and today is considered, the start of the modern UFO era. As a matter of fact, that brought national attention to this subject, which has never died down. And in a couple of more days, on July 2nd, will be the 45th anniversary of the Roswell incident, that there have been a number of books and many, many people investigating this particular incident. Now, my question is, in July 26th, I believe it was, of 1947, the National Security Act was signed into law. What did that do as far as our constitutional guarantees?
Well, the National Security Act ostensibly united the military services, created the Central Intelligence Agency, and established the National Security Council with the SEC advisor. So it of itself seemed to be rather benign, but immediately after the National Security Council and the CIA were created, a whole series of covert directives, this was a publicly available law, and it was publicly, anyone could get the provisions of the law. But once the CIA was established, National Security Council was established, and then there were a whole series of directives, national security directives, that were classified that most in Congress never saw, that went and almost immediately set forth the covert action role of the CIA and the National Security Council. So you had, from that point forward, until about 1975 with the Church Committee investigation, you had the CIA just running roughshod overseas and to a large degree in the United States, doing what it wanted to do totally in secret. And the rules it was following had nothing to do with the act that created it.
And it would appear that no one, not even the federal court systems, could do much with some of these excesses. Okay, we have a call for you, Ralph, on line number one. And we've got a new phone system in here. Let me see if I do this right. I don't want to lose anybody. Okay, we have Vicki on line one.
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Very well. Yes. Ralph, thank you for being on the show tonight. I have a couple of questions. Our area, the UFO field, of course, isn't, in your mind, probably in a lot of other people's, not directly involved with some of the covert operations and various deceptions that are carried out by the intelligence community. But there are some that are clearly crossing over, one of which you guys have already talked about, on forged documents. And you have in your CIA base, I believe, some information regarding some recruitment of college students and other personnel, professors. Was there one, correct me if I'm wrong, in Rochester, New York, where people were actually being trained to identify forged documents?
Yes, not only identify them, but also to make them.
And to make them, that's
yes.
Right. I just wanted to know if you thought it would be conceivable that the Central Intelligence Agency, even though their charter would prohibit this, might endeavor, or other parts of the intelligence community, might endeavor to create forged documents within, like, say, a contained community like the UFO community, and for their own information purposes, circulate those documents, and for whatever reasons, maybe to test various ways of forgery, track public response to them for use in backgrounding other agent officials who may want to learn about this sort of thing. Would that be conceivable, or is that just way really stretching it? This, I'm just wondering what you're...
Yeah, it's hard to say if there's a strong corporate action goal to achieve an objective. The agency goes about not only forging documents, but making sure that these documents come to public attention and get picked up and replayed in the media. So they have been doing this over the years, and they're quite good at doing it. And it depends upon the issue. And if you know the administration wants a particular covert goal achieved, then it can target the agency to do that. Just one instance, in about a 14-year period, the agency wrote about 1,000 books, none of them attributed to the CIA. And they were all setting forth positions on international events that the agency was backing. And we didn't know that. We were accepting it as legitimate professorial studies, legitimate books by defectors, and this, that, whatever. So,
but would they do this with fabricated documents within the domestic United States? Would they do this within the domestic United States? That's what I'd like to know.
I'm trying to think of an instance of fabricating documents. Frequently, what has happened, they'll fabricate a document for an overseas audience,
right,
and then pick it up through their propaganda mechanisms, and they have newspapers in virtually every country of the world, or they, you know, they have elements within every newspapers in every country of the world, and then they will replay that article back into the domestic audience.
Or they will trust that the sort of the communications or media network would get it back into the U.S. one way or the other.
Yes, suppose an article ran in the a newspaper in Chile. Then it would be picked up and replayed in the United States. They
right.
may not plant it directly in the United States, although they have done that, but they would pick up the newspaper, sometimes unwittingly, would pick up the article or the issue and replay it, attributing it to the Chilean newspaper.
Well, Ralph, that is involving itself in domestic affairs here in this country. Is that right? Is that not illegal?
Yes, it's illegal. We saw this particularly during the Reagan years. They established an office.
Oh yeah.
In the State Department, office of I forget.
Well, what is the recourse? I guess my question is, just who is supposed to be watching the watchers?
Well, in this particular case, you had the Iran-Contra investigation, and the Tower Commission wrote a report. The Tower Commission also investigated what happened, and it said, "Oh yes, this office in the State Department was involved in domestic operations, and this is illegal."
Yeah.
And that was the end of it. They called it Office of Public Diplomacy. That was the Office of Public Diplomacy. That was illegal. And everyone said, yes, that was illegal. And, of course, nothing happened.
Sort of an ineffectuality on behalf of the representative government, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have one more real quick question, then I'll let somebody else get on the phone here. There's a rumor that's been going around, not just in the UFO field, but I'm just kind of curious, that the United States may have entered into the Gulf War, as a for instance, because our weapons stockpile has gotten so unbelievable and we had outdated weapons, that one of the reasons that we might have done the Gulf War the way we did, with such bravado and with such, you know, cute weapons tricks, you know, very effective tricks, I might add, was to just dump some of this weapon stockpile. Is that? I don't know if this would be even something that you would have any information, but being near the Beltway, I figure you might have heard rumors or whatever.
I wouldn't think that would be an initial reason for the Gulf War, but I think once it got going, that know, that might have been a reason for might be used to do exactly that. I wouldn't know specifically.
Well, you know, when
it was interesting that the before the war that we were providing Iraq with, I think, was something like $5 billion in aid, and it was disguised as agricultural credits. And
you know, Ralph, when I was in Vietnam in 1971 and 72, they were still dropping iron bombs that were manufactured during the Second World War.
Incidentally, we just saw Brett Scowcroft on the tube denying that there was anything to the allegations about the Bush arming Saddam just before the war.
Okay,
I'll go.
We're at the half-hour spot, Vicki.
Talk to you later.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Ralph, we're at the half-hour spot. We got to take a break, but let me give out the telephone numbers here real quickly. If you're in the 213-310 or 818 area codes this evening, 25-year retired career veteran Ralph McGeehee of the Central Intelligence Agency. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight, and you're listening to the Cable Radio Network. We'll be right back.
CRN, the Cable Radio Network, presents this program for its entertainment value only as a service to our listeners. CRN does not endorse or object.
Okay, we are back. Ralph, I wanted to ask you about your book that you had published in 1983, Deadly Deceits. After 25 years in an organization as covert and as secret as the Central Intelligence Agency, I would think that type of lifestyle, the covertness, the secrecy, would have been almost second nature. What caused you to make a decision to write a book like this? And you had to know that it would make you very unpopular.
Well, I had protested the Vietnam War, protested in the sense that we were, the CIA had lied so long and effectively about what the Vietnam War really was, that it itself began to believe the lies. And I had tried to just bring a little reality to what was going on. And I tried for as I said, I volunteered to go to Vietnam because I thought, first, I went to help win the war when I saw what was happening there. Well, there's no way we can win. The only option for us is to leave because the other side was just too strong, and we weren't admitting it. And, of course, the nature of that war. We were killing Vietnamese. We were dropping napalm on villages of men, women, and children, and that was how we were fighting the war. And we were lying to the American people about what it was all about. This really caused, for me, it almost traumatized me to see this deceit that was being played on the American people and the devastating consequences it was having for the United States. The war, the various estimates of the financial costs of that war go from something like $300 billion to $900 billion.
That's a lot of nickels.
You know, just on the financial side, and of course we lost over 50,000 American boys, and it was tearing us up at home. I was having devastating consequences, and I began protesting internally within the CIA. Look, we're not admitting the truth. If we should begin reporting real intelligence. And of course, when you do that within an organization, you became a dissident. And you immediately become the enemy. And I fought this for a number of years within the agency. Then when I left, that I've got to tell the American people, because the devastating consequences of the Vietnam War visited on the American people by the CIA will be repeated.
Well, you paid a personal price trying to get this book out, didn't you?
Yes. It only took me about 3 years to write, but I had to sue the agency. I sued them three different times because they wouldn't let me say things that I wanted to say.
Were they things that had national security considerations? Were they embarrassing to the agency? Because that's something I think it's very important, Ralph, that we've got to point out, that many times when something is marked classified and not to be released to the public, it's not so much that it's national security as, in many cases, it's embarrassing. Is that not true?
In this particular case, it was very true. How could you admit to the American people that you've been lying to them all the years, and we should not have been in Vietnam, that our reasons for being there were all totally manufactured and were false?
It's exactly correct. For example, just like the UFO field, the government for 45 years, regardless of how many documents have been released or have been forced out of the government to prove that this is a real phenomenon, have been saying for almost a half a century that this is not a real phenomenon. But the fact of it is, it's still going on daily. And if, in fact, this was only someone's delusional bent, you would have thought that this UFO thing would have been pushed away years ago, but yet it's still going strong. So this would appear to be the same thing.
Yes. It very well could be.
Well, after the years that you then spent in court with the CIA, what caused you to begin compiling this huge computerized database that you have now? And tell us a little bit about that. What caused you to begin working on CIA base, which, incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, I have a copy of it, and for research purposes, it's fantastic. And we'll tell you more about that if you're interested, how you can get it before the show is over. But, Ralph, what caused you to go into something like this?
Well, when I tried to write the book, the agency was just cutting out huge sections of it, and as you say, it was mostly the embarrassing information. It wasn't really classified information. And I began going through the archives of the media and various books, and I could find that same information in the public domain. So what I would do when they'd cut something out, I'd go find it somewhere else and then give that as the source. And ultimately, I got most of the information back in the book using this tactic. And I thought, now, wouldn't it be great if you could go to one place and all the information is there, rather than going down to the Library of Congress or going to used bookstores or going to archives here and there? Wouldn't it be great if all of this information is in one place and people who wanted to write about the CIA could have it instantaneously? And this started me. So I began...
Did you have a big working knowledge of computers at that time?
I had no knowledge at all. As a matter of fact, I started on 3x5 cards, which was very, very unsatisfactory, but it was all that I could do. And I finally... I went to computer shows and computer centers and said, this is my problem, this is what I want to do, and tried to get help, but nobody could help me. And finally, I came across one person who had created his own database, and he helped me. And I started out with the old, older type of computer. I can't remember the name of it anymore. And it was a CPM-type computer. They don't make them anymore, hardly. And since that time, I've had four different computers. And it's just, I'm still a little in awe of what can be accomplished. I divided the topics into 100 different subject matters and entered the information in by the topics. And then you can... if you wanted to find out about the use of counterfeits, money, you can just type in the word counterfeit, and wherever that tactic has been used by the CIA, it will come up on the search. So it started out about 8 years ago, and it's just been a very...
Well, this information is now information that could be found elsewhere in the public domain. Is that not correct?
Yes. Yes.
Well, the agency,
but some of it would be in,
obscure journals,
obscure sources that, 99% of the people wouldn't even know existed.
Well, the agency tried to take you back to court in order to make you cease and desist with this project. How did you get around that?
Well, I wrote to him. I'd been compiling for 6 years, never knowing if I could ever get it out or not. And I finally said, well, I've got to throw down the gauntlet. And I went to the agency and said, I'm going to distribute it, and I'm not going to clear it with you. I'm not going to submit it to you for clearance, like is required by law. And I went back and forth with the lawyers, and ultimately I submitted to them a printout from the database and told them, look, this is all from public domain sources. I'm not breaking any laws. And I'm going to begin distributing it. And they said, no, you can't. So I then contacted lawyers, and I had already sued them 3 different times. And I said that if you do not allow me to distribute it, then there will be another lawsuit. And I think they began to appreciate that here was a person who was using public domain information. And there was little legal leg that they would have to prohibit me from doing that. So ultimately, they relented and said I could distribute it.
Okay, we have got to take another break, Ralph, but we will be back in just a moment, so stand by. Like the UFO set. We are back with my guest, Ralph McGeehee, 25-year retired veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency, who today is a very staunch agency critic. Ralph, your CIA base is now available in just about all the computer formats that really count, which is IBM and Apple Macintosh. You just recently got it available for the Mac, didn't you?
Yes, I've been trying for a number of years to get a Mac version, and just a couple of months ago, I was able to do that. So it's been available in IBM format for a while, but just within the last 2 months, they've been able to get the Macintosh version, which I'm really happy about because I think this covers about 98% of the computers in the world, these two systems, so that information can be available.
Absolutely. I know when I was talking to you last year, you had mentioned that you were trying to get something out there for the Mac people. How large is the database now?
It's 6 megabytes. Which I guess would be
that's
equivalent
a lot
of a size of a set of encyclopedias. It's quite large.
Well, let me ask you. You know, it's one thing about people that are really involved in the UFO field. It seems like so many of them, in fact, do have computers, and they use their computers for their research. There are a lot of researchers out there, and I cannot too strongly recommend the CIA base to everybody listening. I know I did a product review on it some time ago in UFO Magazine, and it was just absolutely first rate. If someone is interested in getting in touch with you about CIA base, which is a 6 megabyte computerized database on the CIA covert operations, and as a matter of fact, you have over 100 categories in that, don't you, Ralph?
Right. Tens of thousands of entries. What I like about it the best is that if you're interested in any particular topic, you just type in that word and it'll produce information on what's in it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I found absolutely fascinating about it, and it once again is something that has a crossover into the UFO arena, one of the big things in the UFO field in the last few years have been people reporting having been abducted and detained for a relatively short while by these entities in the UFOs. And then there are people out there who state that it sounds very similar to some of the mind control operations that various intelligence agencies have been accused of performing over the years. One big chunk of your CIA base is devoted to that, isn't it?
Yes, to mind control. That was quite a large-scale operation. I think there was something like 55 hospitals and 100 some odd other institutions that were involved in various mind control experiments by the CIA. And this is documented. The government has finally admitted to that. It won't say which institutions. A number of them are known, but it has admitted that there were that many that were involved in the mind control experiments
and
activities.
People's lives were destroyed also, weren't there, during...
There's one or two suicides as a result of that, and a number of people were never told. They were giving these mind-altering substances, and I guess they, had a very hard time adjusting to what happened.
What are the some of the other subjects that you cover in CIA base?
Well, it runs from A to Y, from academia, CIA operations in academia, to assassinations, to covert operations, which I think is the major activity of the CIA, and that might be broken down into election operations, propaganda operations, paramilitary operations. One of the areas which I think is most important for students of the CIA is its the categories I have in intelligence successes and intelligence failures and intelligence policy, how policy impacts on intelligence. It shows the list of failures is almost endless, while the successes are quite few. The area, I think, of possibly the greatest importance is the number of covert operations and the techniques they use have used over the years to change government, overthrow governments, to deceive people. Deceive the deception is another major category that I have. Looking at some others, the use of biological war. Chemical war, the techniques used in low-intensity conflict, and, of course, in Vietnam, the paramilitary operation.
Well, you know, at UFO Magazine, we have had a suspicion for some time that the UFO research arena would be a perfect training ground for novice agents in psychological warfare. Could you throw any insight in that? Because Lord alone knows how much discord, discord has been carried on throughout the UFO research community, and the psychological warfare aspect has always intrigued me.
Well, I think, as the Pike Committee investigation revealed, that propaganda and deception is the major activity of the CIA. It's not the only agency involved in that, but it is the major activity. And the ability to manipulate people's perception is quite similar to the George Orwell's, the technique used in George Orwell's book 1984, where you have the Ministry of Truth. Of course, its role was to deceive the American people. It's very, very... close similarities between what you saw in 1984 and what the agency has been able to do, and the ability, and I always think of Vietnam, the ability to deceive the American people from the beginning in the early 50s up until today's date about what really happened there is just sort of awe-inspiring, and the techniques can be used for in any arena, not just in Vietnam, but in any involving any country.
Well, I want to touch upon that very quickly in just a moment, Ralph, but we've got a break for UFO Magazine News Update by Vicki Cooper, so just stand by, and in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, we'll be right back to you.
Hello, this is Vicki Cooper with the UFO Magazine News Update and Comment for Sunday, June 28, 1992. Ufology is a sadly forgotten science. People who try to make scientific sense of the phenomenon not only have to face the paradoxical nature of UFOs, they usually have to endure the absolute scorn of their colleagues, too. The mainstream finds UFO science a contradiction in terms, a fringe pursuit with not even the slightest academic blessing. A small group of hopeful UFO researchers is now trying to change that. At the recent UFO symposium sponsored by the International Association for New Science, plans were made to inaugurate the first UFO Academy, an exclusive institution which would grace the field of UFO research with some very high standards. If funded, this academy will supposedly begin some new worthwhile UFO projects, too. Oh, and by the way, only the most credentialed and experienced people need apply. About time, right? Wrong. The tiny in-group, which will seek funding for the academy, will also make the determination as to who is sufficiently experienced to be worthy of joining their dream school. Is that fair? Ufology doesn't need a self-ordained priesthood which maximizes private interests by minimizing public access. Such elitism will only serve to further divide an already fragmented UFO community and spawn the unhealthiest elements within the academy's leadership. A spirit of true compromise and academic inquiry will be lost, in effect, moving ufology backwards instead of forwards. What's the alternative? Well, there's another academy in the making. It's called the American Academy of Dissident Sciences. But even with its bold title and its noble goal of exposing what the government suppresses, this operation has some problems too. The Academy's material shows clear support of cases which are known to be hoaxes. Again, a painful example of ufology moving backwards instead of forwards. For all these criticisms, the recent push to legitimize UFO study can only be seen as a most positive trend. These two academies may not make the grade, but someday there will be one that does. Let's just hope the UFO academics of the future will know a hoax when they see one and won't package themselves and their system in an ivory tower. This UFO Magazine news update and comment is brought to you by UFO Magazine. Write us at P.O. Box 1053, Sunland, California, 91041. Call 818-951-1250. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. This is Vicki Cooper with UFO Magazine and UFOs Tonight on Cable Radio Network.
And we are back, Ralph. Now, to get back to CIA base, if someone wants to check this out, how do they go about getting in touch with you?
They could write to CIA base, Post Office Box 5022, that's in Herndon, Virginia, H-E-R-N-D-O-N, Virginia, 22070, and just say they want information, and I'll be glad to send them a copy of a brochure that tells about the CIA base.
And they can also, if you missed that address, you can reach us at UFO Magazine at 818-951-1250, and I can give you that address, CIA Base, P.O. Box 5022, Herndon, Virginia, 22070. Well, Ralph, in the last couple of minutes before we have to break for the evening, what do you have up and coming?
I've just sent out, only yesterday, update notices on this, and I've included all of the books that have been entered for the last 6 months. And I've seen there was a book fair held very recently, and there are a number of important books that are coming out in the fall, which I'll be picking up and including in the CIA base.
So you have a new update going out?
It's every 6 months I send out an update notice for those who want to get the update.
Okay, and we weren't aware of that. I wasn't aware of that. I hadn't received one.
I just mailed it yesterday.
Okay.
Or put it in the mail yesterday. I'll make sure that you get that one. And it's just an ongoing effort to locate back sources, older sources that are obscure and nobody knows about, while keeping current with what's going on right now. For instance, there's an intelligence newsletter out of Paris, France. It's very good. They have a lot of money behind them, and they put out biweekly reports, which I get. They're quite expensive, but I think it's critical that they be included. And there are a number of other sources that most people would never know about. But since this is, my field that I'm able to locate and bring into and put in
Absolutely. We definitely need more people like you, Ralph, to keep them on their toes. Well, let me ask you one quick last question, and we are going to have to call it quits tonight. Since the Soviet Union is no longer around, who is going to be our next best greatest enemy?
Well, of course, we've got Saddam now, and we've got Gaddafi. We're obviously going to...
Yeah, but those guys are second string. Do we have any first stringers?
Well, the intelligence community is trying to justify itself now on the basis of going after terrorists, drug dealers. It's getting involved in economic intelligence. You know, it's got to come up with some major target, as you say, or enemy, and they're having a heck of a time doing it.
Well, let me bounce something off you. What do you think of the possibility of the unidentified flying object phenomenon? That would make a great one, wouldn't it?
That could be one, yes.
Well, if you caught Larry King last week, and believe me, I'm not giving myself a plug, or hard copy a couple of weeks ago, it seems to show something that is almost beyond belief, which might be a weapons firing at an unidentified flying object in orbit. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have tonight. We are out of time. So look, I want you to tune in next week, tell your friends about the show, and remember, keep your eyes to the skies. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight, and you're listening to the Cable Radio Network. Thank you, Ralph, and we want to have you come back on again.
Thank you, Brett.
That's it. You bet. You guys take care.